Hi, I'm Jillian Swinford.
And I'm Haley Brolison.
And this is Mother Nature Will Kill You,
a podcast about the most horrific tragedies
and the most triumphant survival stories that the wilderness can provide.
So grab your backpack
and maybe a bottle of wine
and let's go on a wild ride into the unknown.
Walking down this road I go, but I am going alone, running far, far from home till I skin and bone. I don't want to die, but I'll have to try. I don't want to die, but I'm on my own. Everybody.
Good morning.
Good evening. Good afternoon. Good night. We were just talking because we're making plans about what the hell we're going to do while I don't have a computer and I'm in the middle of a move. But then we're starting to talk about Timothy Treadwell, and Haley watched The Grizzly Man?
I did, yeah. On Prime, and it's for free, so you don't have to pay for that hot mess. But
yeah, it's not a hot mess because it's Werner Herzog, so it's very well done. But
yeah, no, it's well done. But I texted Jillian when I was watching it, and I was like, okay, a few things. And I was like, first thing is that when this guy talks to the bears, his voice reminds me of the old gay man on Family Guy, where he talks to Chris like, oh, there he is, you little cute boy, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, the pedophile. Like, yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, okay, this is weird.
And yep.
The other thing was how, like, him videoing the bears and documenting it and talking about the bears, it really gave off, like, the Tommy Wiseau Danger Room. Or is it, no, not Disaster Room vibe?
Yeah.
Or I guess it's technically Disaster Room is the one with
James Franco.
James Franco.
The original movie is The Room.
The Room, though, yeah.
Yeah.
And I couldn't take it seriously.
I just was watching that, and I just felt so uncomfortable. And every time he came on to talk, and I don't know.
It got progressively, like, more, like, crazy. Like,
yeah,
you could tell, like, his mental state and his, like, relation with bears. Like, it progressively got worse.
Like, it's very, very obvious if you watch that. And so you can kind of see where we're coming from, where we're like, you know, this person did die a horrible death. And, like, that shouldn't have happened. And it's awful the way he died. But, like, he as a person was very unstable. Or seems so, at least. I don't know. Maybe he was playing a role on camera, but I don't think he was, you know?
Yeah, I felt really bad for the pilot that was, like, trying to find them, and then he saw the remnants of the attack. I felt really bad for him because that's very traumatizing.
Well, and like, Timothy was his friend, too.
Yeah.
And, like, that's awful. But it is so hard to watch this man on camera. Like Timothy, like, there's something so uncomfortable about the way he talks to these animals.
Yeah, and just how close he gets to them and everything.
And like, I'm a baby talker. I'll baby talk to anything. But it's just, like, a different level of that. I don't know.
Yeah,
did you see the scene where, like, the fox, his little fox buddy, takes his hat?
Yeah, that's just when, like, I was like, okay, he's off his rocker a bit.
He loses his mind. He gets so mad at this fox that's just foxing. Like, it's just doing fox things. Like,
yeah, and, like, I don't know. To me, it seemed like he was talking to it like he had trained it, like you train a dog.
Yeah.
Like, drop it. Like,
yeah.
Listen, like, you know. like sit, stay, you know, drop it, come. Like he was talking to it like he had trained it like someone would train a dog, and then he was getting like progressively more upset when it wouldn't listen. And it's like
And
it's
it's like,
a fox. Like it's
it's
a
a
wild
wild
animal.
animal. Yeah. Like,
It's
it's
not
like
gonna
he
listen to
just
you.
didn't really understand that part of it. You know, like he thought he was like an animal whisperer, I guess. I don't. And
Like you're
it's
not a
like,
Thornberry. You don't talk to animals. Like you don't have that superpower.
no. And
Yeah,
nobody
so
does. And even if you could, there'd be such a like a mental disconnect anyway about like what is important. What is important to a fox is not what's important to a human. You know what I mean? Like they're not gonna care. They don't understand the concept of property. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, they're like, oh, this smells like a smell that I've never known. So I'm gonna take it and bring it back to me, or bring it back to my den with me.
This looks like it'll be good for nest material. I don't know. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Yeah, he was like, I swear to God, if I find this in your den, you're in big trouble, mister. And then he finds it in the den. He's like, blows his lid, like, what
it's
the
like,
fuck?
I thought that was your friend. I thought, you know, that fox was supposed to be your friend. And yeah, you're treating like it's your child and you have like some kind of power over or like control over it.
Imagine like if you didn't know the story of that guy and you were just like a bear fanatic and you're like, oh, there's a bear documentary on Amazon Prime. Let's watch this. And then you start watching and you're like, what the hell am I watching right now?
I know.
Like, I feel like if you're gonna watch that, you have to at least be mentally prepared for the chaos that ensues.
Yeah. And I straight up was it like I knew what happened to him eventually, but like when I started watching that, I did not know what like he was like. You know what I mean? I just expected a regular run-of-the-mill like documentarian, like, yeah, so the bears are doing this, blah, 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 but it's not like that at all.
Yeah, like
And
more on like you would probably think it's probably like, accidental how Steve Irwin died. He's like, oh, I'm gonna film an episode about stingrays and like, wrong place, wrong time, wrong angle, like just complete sheer accident, just got jabbed,
Yeah, but
But
that's not what it's like at all. It's something else. So I don't know what he was planning on turning it into ultimately, because it's like just the lack of like scientific literacy. I get that you can observe and learn through that, but I don't know. It's a very unfortunate situation. So if you want to be uncomfortable too, go watch it. So you can see what we're really talking about with this person. And it's not meant to like degrade the death that happened was not good. I wouldn't wish it on him. I don't, it happened, but it's not like I wanted it to happen kind of thing. But yeah, there was something going on there, and this person needed some kind of help, I think.
Yeah, for sure. I am. I obviously it's a very sad story, but I also wanted to see the show, documentary, movie that you were referencing, and I was like, oh wow, okay, I see what she was talking about now.
It's just you're just watching it like it's a car crash, really.
Well, and then my other observation from that was like all of the female like statements that were like female interviews, like giving their statement of like how they knew him and he was a great guy and all that stuff. I was like, you guys aren't all just friends with him. Like people can tell, I just like loved him so much. We were just so close and
I'm like,
like, oh my
y'all.
God, like he got
He did get
around.
around. What it kind of reminded me of is like he had the charisma of like a cult leader to some women. Not to me, I'd be like, whoa, whoa, whoa. But like, I think some women really gravitate towards that. And that's kind of the energy that I was seeing. I'm not calling him a cult leader, but I think some people just like have that, you know what I mean? And he had it. It was
I don't get I don't get how how that happens. Like how like just like I don't know. I guess I just can't wrap my head around it. Like how you and I would be like, that's fucking insane. Like even the what was it? Like the cult that was like Waco and like the other what was the other one that was in California?
Oh, there's a million, so.
Yeah. But anyway, like just stuff like that where it's like I don't understand how people are like, "Oh my God, this is a great idea. Let me go join this
It's
group," you
because
know.
they target people who are naturally empathetic, who are down on their luck, who are looking for a solution,
Yeah.
who are easily convincible, don't necessarily have a good, strong sense of self, don't have a support system. And people like that totally exist. And they'll prey on people's like religious tendencies as well, starting off like with reasonable things, and then eventually as they get ingrained in the group, then it's like, oh, well, we're gonna have this new crazy doctrine that you have to follow, but they're already so bought into it that they'll, buy it hook, line, and sinker. I've read a lot of, because cults fascinate me, because so my dad's cousin died at Jonestown.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Really? Wow.
So she literally drank the Kool-Aid.
Oh my God.
So cults have always fascinated me, because I feel like I'm not particularly religious, and so I don't think I would, and I have a support system and I have a strong sense of self, so I don't think I would like naturally fall for those kinds of
Yeah.
things, but trying to understand how people can and do is something that I'm very interested in.
Yeah. That's crazy. I did not know that. That's wild.
A little fun fact about our family.
Oh my God, I have so many more questions, but I'll ask them later.
I probably don't have all of the answers for you, but yeah,
But that was the
that's
California one that I was thinking of.
yeah, and maybe I started California, but they ended up in like down in like Central or South America.
Oh, okay.
That's
Yeah.
where Jonestown was. Yeah.
Gotcha.
So I kind of like pay attention to those signs, and I don't know why, but I kind of got the cult leader vibe from Timothy Tranwell, because he had all these women willing to do all of these crazy things with
Yeah.
him. And it's that's kind of a sign to me, because
Yeah.
I'm like, I ain't gonna go out like living in the Alaskan wilderness without protection for however many months. And
Yeah.
I don't want to do that. And I like the wilderness.
Yeah.
So.
Sarah called me the other day. She was like, "When you want to go back to Alaska?" And I was like, "I want to go back. I just need, money and time to
Time,
do
yeah.
that." And she was like telling me how she's like, "Yeah, I thought about going like on a trip by myself, like to Montana or like Wyoming or like Alaska or something." But then I was like, "Bears by myself, I'd probably die. I should bring somebody with me." And I was like, "Yeah, that's a smart move." Smart move. And I was like, "I'm gonna back you on that." Like I do, like her and I always talk about like going back on these like trips, like Alaska and like in the mountains and stuff. And I was like, I do want to do that again. I need to figure out my life a little bit and get some
Yeah, I
money.
mean, you're in a transition space. So I guess to everybody who doesn't know that you have accepted a job.
Yes, I have. So I am leaving my current role as a marketing manager at a nonprofit, and I am going to being a biologist.
Yay!
Yay.
We
Yeah,
need
I
to
was just
change our little tag on the Instagram, because now you're a biologist again
I
too.
know. I think it's funny. Like, I was thinking about that the other day. I was like, because in my Instagram bio, it says, like, fisheries biologist turned coral reef communicator. And now I feel like I should just put it like somewhere between marketing and biologist. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I just somewhere between there. Like, yeah.
That's exciting, though. Are you excited about it?
Yeah, no, I'm excited about it. I'm like a little concerned about the money because it's, I'm took a step back in that sense, but there's room for promotions and, raises and things for that. So I'm hoping that that can change within a year, but I know I'm excited for it. I'm happy, like I'm excited to see what this new chapter holds. I think like something that's kind of like bugging me, but it's clearly just like an ego thing on my end, is like there's like this whole judgment of like in the marine science world apparently of like sea turtle biologists and like dolphin biologists and stuff. And like I don't know, like people joke about it and I'm like, I think it's just such bullshit. It's like you're in the marine science world, like you're a biologist, like are you going to be really that judgmental of like a person because they work with a different animal species than you do? Like
Here's my,
that's just like such an asshole thing,
yeah. And
like
it's not just in Florida, it's everywhere, because like if this is like one of the, I won't call it hazing because that's not what it is, but like one of the jokes you play on interns or like new hires and stuff. Like if we're out and somebody sees a dolphin, they're like, "Oh, look, dolphins." Immediately they will get come for like even being excited about seeing a dolphin. And I'm just like, I don't know. And so I've started going around saying, like, honestly, anytime, any day I see a dolphin, it's a good day. That's
yeah,
my
like
new
it's cool to
like.
see animals. Like I don't know. Like I just always thought it was cool to see animals. Sorry that you don't like animals.
Well, I like got into this field because I was obsessed with whales and dolphins, and then I quickly realized that like that's a really hard career path, specifically that to get into. And I like fish and invertebrates and all kinds of stuff just as much. I'm more interested in the entire habitat necessarily than just like the whales and the dolphins. And I think because a lot of people go in wanting to be like working at SeaWorld, or I want to work with the dolphins. And I think those people kind of set the tone for sea turtle and cetacean biologists, which is a shame. So that's the, on the one hand, there's that. On the other hand, I think there is a level of, or there's some level of jealousy of the people who didn't make it in the dolphin and whale, sea turtle side of things. Like they didn't get into that work. And so there's that. And then I think the other thing is there are some fucking annoying, like big mammal and sea turtle biologists. There just are,
That's
because
the
a lot
thing.
of
It's
them are
like,
very like bleeding heart about it, and expect their animal to be prioritized over everybody else. And I'm not saying that it's a blanket statement by any means, but like some of the sea turtle biologists I've worked with down here, I definitely give off that vibe of
well,
like,
that's like,
well.
yeah, when I heard like, like Sarah and Ari were making like those statements because like they, work in that the marine science field as well. And like, then some of their friends that we hang out with were like making those statements too. And I was like it wasn't just like, it wasn't like a straight up statement of like, oh, they're bad. It was like a, like, oh, freaking dolphin people, or like, oh, like, sea turtle people, or what, you know what I mean? It was just kind of like slight side comment, like that you're like, okay, what does that mean? And so like in my head, I'm like, who the fuck am I about to work with? Like, you know what I mean? I'm like, what is happening here? So yeah, that was like also part of it too. And then like, I don't know, talking with like a mutual friend, it just, he made it seem like it was more of like a, oh, like those people work with those animals, like the charismatic megafauna, because they couldn't get into research. And it's like, my animal doesn't talk to me. And like, I care about that animal. Like, your animal like expresses emotion. And like, of course, like, like stuff like that. It's like, you care about it because like it expresses emotion and it makes you feel things, or do you care about it because like you actually care about marine science? You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. And I was like, okay, I hear you, but also like, are you calling me fucking dumb because I'm working with sea turtles? Like, I like, are you, do you think I'm not qualified? Like, you know what I mean? I was like, I'm very well aware that I've been out of like the sea turtle field for quite some time, but like I do have 5 years of experience in it. Like,
Well,
it's not like I don't
yeah,
know
and
anything
also
about
like
it.
you have worked with fish, you know? Well, and like in the fish world, there's even some of that too. Like the people that work with game fish, I think that they're the coolest. You know what I mean? And I don't typically work with game fish, or when I do, I work with like the juvenile game fish because I kind of specialize in that a little bit more. Or like shark people. Shark people are the dolphin people of the fisheries world. You know what I mean? Like, so there's that divide in every single category even. And I think so welcome to the marine bio drama,
I
everybody.
know
We're
there's
not
like a,
all like
yeah, they
working
like
together.
have they have a label for each fucking department, and like they just like, you know, tag these people as like just I don't know. And so I, long story short, I just think it's annoying. I think it's a very small-minded way to think about
Yeah,
like other people in the field. It's
it
like
is.
you shouldn't have to just be like, oh, like you're working with sea turtles now, like, you know, Haley's a sea turtle girl now, like, or, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's just
Yeah,
rude. That's
yeah.
kind of what it is.
Well,
So
and there, oh, so here's another fun divide. 'Cause so I'm gonna be a lobster biologist basically in Cape Cod. That's gonna be like my main focus, which I mean, they are like one of the biggest recreational species there. Like they are the driver of that, or one of the big drivers of that economy is like lobster and scallop, right? So, there's a divide between the invert and the fisheries people too. So it's like with invert was like, oh, those people work with animals with spines, so they're not, you know, or like the invert people get talk because we're working with, you know, invertebrates, they're dumb, they're bugs, whatever, and it's like it's so stupid because it's like, bitch, I've worked in fisheries, I've worked on a big charismatic fish, I work with alligator gar, like it's like that's so dumb, but I've also worked with like shrimp, so it's like I don't know. I personally am very flexible. I don't care what I'm researching really, as long as it's like gonna be an interesting survey. You know what I mean?
No, I hear you. I'm like,
So.
I don't really care what I work with as long as like I'm happy doing my job and like I know I'm qualified to do the job, you know? I'm like, okay, like I gotta go take a survey of a sea turtle nest. Yeah, sure. I'm out there, you know? Like I gotta go pick up a sea turtle because it's stranded somewhere. Okay, yeah, I'll go do that. Like,
Yeah, it's like as long as you're out and it like in the environment and working with these animals, like I could see you very easily being like a spiny lobster biologist as much as like a sea turtle. You know what I mean? Like you'd be perfectly happy doing that too. You know what I mean?
I
So,
know. It's just, yeah, it's like I said, I just think it's like a small-minded way to think about things. So it's like, I don't know. And I think like people that I work with down here, like they hear me say that I used to be in fisheries and I don't think that they really understand like all of the things that I've done in fisheries. 'Cause I'm like, dude, I was like, I can very well just hop back on a boat and like help you with a survey if you need an extra hand. Like,
Yeah, like you
that's
worked
easy
with
for me to do.
you worked on the same the striped bass sand survey, you worked with trout, you worked with what, snook and like a lot of big game fish, like so it's like, you know, could just as, and that's how I am too, right?
I just get frustrated with like people making comments like that, you know, that's
So
off.
I wouldn't take it to heart, maybe change some minds about sea turtle biologists, you know?
I know. Well, he was like our mutual friend was like, oh, I never saw you. Like, he's like, I don't see you in that position. And I'm like, why? Like, what? Like, just I'm trying to remove my attitude from the question. I'm like, why do you think that? You know? Oh, like the current person in that role is like just, you know, sits at a desk and like, you know, she's on a phone a lot. And I'm like, okay, I have a desk job right now. Like, that's nothing different for me, you know? And like, you know, I guess what he was saying was she probably made that position a little bit more, I don't know, as an office job than it needed to be. And it's only one person for like this region. So like, yeah, I'm an OPS fish or OPS biologist one, which is like the lowest of the low in terms of biologist. But like, I'm gonna be in charge of a whole region of sea turtle strandings and nestings. So, like, it's really weird how it's like that's it's that labeled like that. But
Yeah.
you know, I was
Well, and
like,
like, yeah, I'm going from working with all kinds of different fish to just mainly working with lobsters and other invertebrates. And at first I was like, oh, is this a setback? But it's like, no, it's not, because like I'm gonna be covering the entire coast. I'm gonna be working with commercial guys. I'm gonna be going out on boats, and we're gonna be diving to do like young of year juvenile like lobster surveys. So it's
yeah.
like I'm gonna be doing what I wanna do, which is like be in the environment. And you know, I don't care what I'm working with.
Yeah, I know. People were saying that they weren't sure how much I would be in the field with that position, and I'm like, okay, that's fine. Like,
Because
but
it's you're not in the field now,
I
right?
know. I was like, I'm not in the
So,
field, but at least with that position, I have like a little bit more of a chance to be in the field. You know
yeah.
what I mean? And it's like, I guess the person in that position used to go out to these nesting sites in the Keys and like do surveys. And like, you know, a lot of our mutual friends are biologists for different organizations that work down here as well. So like there was one that was telling us that there hasn't been a nest survey on one of these islands in like the last 10 years. And so he was like, I just think that maybe she kind of like took a step back and like started doing more desk work kind of thing instead of like being out in the field a lot. And so they were like, but that means that like for you, like you have potential to make that position like thing that you really want it to be. Like you could go out to the Marquesas and do surveys. You could go out to the Dry Tortugas and like, you know, do surveys. And I'm like, that would be fucking sweet if I
Yeah,
just
you
like,
should.
hey, I'm gonna go out to the Dry Tortugas this weekend and like do surveys, you know.
Yeah, totally.
So like an aerial surveys, like things like that. So I'm like, yeah, I feel like once I get, you know, my feet wet and like reoriented with everything, like, but the only other thing too that I'm a little concerned about is just like working with my husband. You know what I mean? Like you
You know, I've done
yeah.
it, and if it's in small doses, it's not that bad. It's really not.
Yeah, because I know that we'll be in different buildings or different parts of the building. So I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
that's cool. Like we're not gonna be like seeing each other a lot. And like I know I'll have to probably call you for things every now and then. But I also like, you know, I don't want to work with somebody that I'm married to
No,
on a
I totally
regular
get
basis.
that. Yeah, I mean, Corey and I both worked for TPWED while we were down here. We worked in separate offices, so we didn't really physically see each other, but it's just about setting boundaries. But I would go out. We've done field sampling together now. We did it for a whole summer because of COVID, because we didn't know how that was going to impact his diabetes. And so I was like, well, why don't I just go out with him, because we're living together. We're quarantined with each other. So we did all of East Bay for like a couple of months. We did all of the sampling, and we got in fights, but like, so when I say like it'll be fine, especially if you're not actually other, you know what I
Working.
mean?
Yeah, the show. But yeah, so that's all of that update. And I just know my brain is going to be like, oh, I'm starting this new position and people already have this judgment about me because I work with turtles. So like I already have an issue with people with me thinking that people hate me all the time, and I feel like it's just going to get, you know what I mean? Like I already know that there's a judgment about this position and
Well,
I'm walking into it, you know what I mean?
I
So,
do. So maybe you need to look at it like, you know, we're going to work on changing people's perception of it, you know? So that's all you can do.
I know. Definitely more money.
Congrats, and we're moving on to other things, and it's exciting.
I know it is. New chapters.
New challenges, but that's okay, because I think no job is going to be perfect, really.
I mean, like, yeah, my dad's always told me, like, there's always going to be some level of stress associated with, like, the job that you're in. And I was like, yeah, I get that. But, like, I also, like, I was talking to my mom about it. I was like, I also just don't want to be, like, you know, texted or called all the time about things. You know, like, I turned my Gmail notifications off, I think, during Christmas when I was out of office for Christmas. I haven't turned them back on since because I was like, this is awesome. Like, I don't want
Yeah,
to
no, I
be notified
don't.
that I'm getting emails at like 3 a.m. You know, like, I don't want you to call me at 8 p.m. when I'm trying to have dinner with my family. Like,
No, and you shouldn't. And nobody, I'm not like, There should be, once you're off the clock, you're off the clock. I honestly, unless I'm trying to set up a field thing the next day and I'm specifically texting people about that, I don't answer texts
Yeah.
about work. I just don't. I'm like, or look at emails and I'm like, this, we can deal with this tomorrow.
Like, I'm just trying to have lunch on a Saturday. You know what I mean? Like, why?
Yeah.
Don't talk to me.
It can wait. You know, like it can just wait.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like the other side of it. People are like, oh, it's just a text message. You can just ignore it. And I'm like, yeah, I get that. But like, it's the principle of it. You know what I mean? Like,
Yeah.
it bothers me that somebody is like, oh, it's a weekend. It doesn't matter. I'm just gonna send this text anyway.
Yeah.
It bothers me that they're not thinking, oh, it's the weekend, like people aren't working, like they don't need to be bothered with this right now. It can
Right.
wait until Monday. Like, that's what
Yeah.
bothers me, is like you really don't have that respect for like your
Yeah.
coworker off, where it's
Also, why
like,
are you working? You should also be
yeah, it's
off.
like you should also be off. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
Exactly. Well,
So
speaking of time and respecting time and learning about time,
let's
that's
get on with it.
what our no, that wasn't a dig at you.
Oh.
That's what our episode's going to be actually all about today. Which is kind of a little bit of a leap from our usual fare of people dying in horrific ways. But I do think occasionally it's nice to have these kind of these stories, because I think talking about like the psychology of, you know, spending time in strange environments is part of it, right? Because we talk about people who go to space, we talk about people who go to the poles, we talk about people who are very far from where humans should be. And so this topic is specifically looking into the psychology of time in isolation. Which I think is very applicable to people in, you know, astronauts, polar explorers, people who do open ocean kind of, you know, sailing and traveling and stuff, because you're in a very strange environment that's very monotonous and you're there for a while, with limited ways to entertain yourself. And so cavers are also an example of this, because a lot of cavers will go, especially into like deep cave situations. You'll be there for days or even maybe a week or two at a time, because it just the time it takes for you to get to the bottom of the cave or wherever you're researching. And so that is where our topic goes today. And I think this is something I heard about a long time ago, and I find it so fucking fascinating. So this is the story of Michel Siffre and the French time isolation experiments.
So I will say I started to read a little bit about this when you sent it to me, so I could like kind of prepare the conservation
Yeah.
corner and see what we were working with. And it reminded me, well, I didn't read all of it, and it reminded me of there was this like Netflix documentary that I watched about another sort of isolation experiment, and I believe it was like in the 60s, about like prison, like guard versus prisoner. And if you haven't seen that, I would watch it. I think you'd probably think it's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, this definitely feeds into like aspects of military and like prisons, like solitary confinement, stuff like that as well. So it has applications in a lot of different areas.
Yeah, let me see if I
So,
can find it really quickly.
all right, while you do that, I'm going to make sure I'm saying this man's name correctly.
Well, how do you say his name?
Michel Siffre, not
Sifra.
Siffre.
Oh.
My American's coming out.
Yeah.
I don't speak French, so I am terribly sorry.
Fair.
I knew it was Michelle instead of Michael. Give me
Yeah.
that.
That's good. The Stanford Prison Experiment.
Yes.
That's what it's
Yes.
called.
So interesting. And not just
Yeah.
because of like the isolation, because of like the social aspect of like being in power
Yeah.
versus not.
Yeah.
So fucked up and so interesting. And so crazy how quickly people like fit into their roles, which
Yes.
again is like, okay, so why do people join cults? Fucking Stanford Prison Experiment is a perfect example of how easy it is for somebody who has a, you think you have a set personality to just like go down a completely different fucked up path. Like
Yeah.
within weeks,
Yeah.
not like even like a year. Like,
It was
so
a
interesting.
psychological experiment conducted in August 1971. So it wasn't the 60s like I thought it
Yeah,
was
close
the
enough.
60s.
Close
Yeah.
enough.
I just remembered like the aesthetic. And it was a 2-week simulation of a prison environment that examined the effects of situational variables on participants' reactions and behaviors. So it
Yeah.
was over the course of 2 weeks, and a lot of shit happened in 2 weeks.
Yeah, like a lot of really fucked up shit. So it's like,
Yeah.
how can people join cults? Well, just watch the Stanford Prison Experiment and you'll be like, oh, people can be convinced to do anything, really.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my
And
God.
so our story today happened over the course of what, a month? Is that what it was?
So there were three different experiments that we're going to talk about. The first one is 2 months. So
Okay. Gotcha.
yeah, so let's get into it. So Michel Ciffre was a French biologist and speleologist by training, or sorry, geologist and speleologist by training, and had a love for caves, primarily researching cave systems in the Alps. He was born on January 3rd in 1939 in how do you say this? Nice? It's
Nice.
Nice.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Where he spent his childhood before receiving his baccalaureate, which to us means something completely different, but there it's a French national academic qualification that students can obtain at the completion of their secondary education. And receiving a postgraduate degree at the Sorbonne. He later founded the French Institute of Speleology. So in 1961, when he was in his early 20s, he and his team discovered an underground glacier in the Alps, which, first of all, fucking cool. I didn't know we had underground glaciers. I thought they were
Yeah,
all
I
on
thought
the
that was neat
top.
too.
At first, his idea was to do a geological expedition, spending 15 days underground studying the glacier, but decided 15 days is not enough. I shall see nothing. So I decided to stay for 2 months. And then this idea came to me, this idea that became the idea of my life. I decided to live like an animal, without a watch, in the dark, without knowing the time.
That's crazy to me.
Which I don't know that's necessarily living like an animal, because animals have a very, we'll get into, everybody has, every living thing kind of has an internal clock. And so animals are very aware of things like photo period. Like the time of day, lengthening and shortening.
Well, I mean, if you think about it, like a lot of animals spawn around new and full moons. And like seasonal as well, and they only
Yeah.
do it, some animals only do it once a year, so it's like they do have like have some sort of, like you said, internal clock is
Yeah.
like that tells them like, oh, it's time to spread my seed,
Yep.
so
It's pretty nice scene. Yeah, but it's very much driven by sun and moon interactions, like these external factors. And so he was even talking about removing that as well.
which I feel like is not a good idea.
Well, they did it and they learned a lot about the human clock because of it,
Well,
internal clock.
when I saw the title was like isolation experiment, my mind immediately went to, was it like Sweden or something that had another isolation experiment where like people looked like zombies when they got out of it?
Yeah, that's a big fake thing, by the way. We've talked about
Oh,
this before.
we have, you're right.
Apparently,
But that's
there's Russian sleep experiments, which may have actually happened.
Russian,
But
yeah.
like, there's like a picture associated with
And
it
they
that's
look like
literally,
all white faced and like
yeah,
black. holes for their eyes and
And it's a
stuff.
Halloween decoration. Like
Oh,
they've
okay.
proven that's a Halloween, and that's the picture that's always associated with that. So like
So
people are
that's what
like,
I
oh
think
my
of
God.
when I read isolation experiment, my mind sees that picture in my head and I'm like, oh, we're in for it.
Well, and the thing is, like, it does really screw with you, but no, that picture is not authentic
Oh.
at
Okay. Got it.
So yeah. So in 1962, French speleologist, I gotta stop saying that word, Michel Ciffre spent 2 months living in total isolation in a cave without access to a clock, calendar, or sun. He would sleep and eat only when the body told him to. His goal was to discover natural rhythms of human life, quote unquote, beyond time. Oh, hi, Waylon. Hi, Bubba.
Oh,
Just over your shoulder, huh? Over the shoulder.
reaction.
When asked about his fascination with caves, he stated, it is dark. You need a light, and if your light goes out, you're dead. In the Middle Ages, caves were places where demons lived, but at the same time, caves are a place of hope. We go into them to find minerals and treasures, and it's one of the last places where it's still possible to have fun adventures and make new discoveries.
But also, fuck caves. Everybody knows I hate caves.
And we're back. But hey, this time, like, no one dies. So
Good. That's good.
I'm trying to give a new light to caves, I guess. That was a good pun. So after this first experiment, he organized a dozen underground time isolation experiments, helping found the field of human chronobiology. So, chronobiology is the study of the body's biological rhythms or the way it generates its physiological oscillations. Basically, your inner temperature changing and like different hormones happening at different times, and keeps its various systems synchronized. So, stuff that I am fascinated with but don't always fully understand. Because I think definitely things like hormone fluctuations within a month for women would fall under this category,
A 1,000%. That was the first thing I thought of when you said like hormones.
And like how the world is basically made for men, like offices and stuff are set to like their like hormone cycles during the day and their body temperature, and how we just have to like deal. And how there's just weeks where we're less productive because our hormones are telling us, hey, how about no? And then there's weeks where we're like crazy productive because our hormones are like, yes. So it's like,
Yeah, it's a nightmare to be a woman.
it really is. So on July 16th, of 1962, Cifra descended into the abyss of Skarason in the French Alps, which is the cave holding the underground glacier that they had discovered in 1961. So Cifra was just 23 years old at the time of the experiment. His camp was 130 meters below the surface, so actually not that far when it comes to cave standards. Next to the glacier. In this experiment, flashlight and a lantern were like the only light sources that he had. I mean, he brought like extra batteries and all that kind of crap, but yeah. And he was deprived of all watches or other reminders of the passage of time. So he.
But can we talk about his headlamp for a second?
Yeah. That's a big honk. I mean, it's
His
the
headlamp,
60s.
though, is like it's a candle inside a metal bowl.
Yeah, it's like I'm sure it's like gas run, like a gas.
What I just thought it was interesting. I was like, holy crap, he literally has a flame at the light to guide him through this cave. I just thought it was crazy.
Back in the day. I think the metal bowl is like to reflect that light better.
That's what I would think too.
Yeah.
And also, like, not catch him on fire.
I mean, probably good. But considering the conditions of this cave, it'd be pretty hard to catch them on fire. So,
Yeah.
Sifra lived underground alone for 63 days, but he attempted to keep time by estimating day length due to his assumed time asleep and awake. So he was estimating for himself what he thought the time was. He had phone communication with the research team to tell them back on the surface when he woke up, when he ate his meals, and when he went to sleep. So they would write down like actually what time it was when he did
Yeah.
all of those things. But he received no communication from them other than like them telling him when the experiment was over and then it was time for him to leave.
Okay.
So his team couldn't call him, so he wouldn't have any idea what time it was on the outside. Sifra also had to perform two tests every time he called to the surface. One was taking his pulse, and two was counting from 1 to 120 at the rate of one count per second. So basically counting 2 minutes by seconds, basically.
Gotcha. Yeah.
I think we all kind of feel like we know how long a second is.
Yeah, one Mississippi,
Yeah,
like.
exactly. But it was later determined that it took him 5 minutes to count from 1 to 120, meaning that
So he thought time was longer than it was or shorter? Longer,
longer.
okay.
So he psychologically experienced 5 real minutes as if they were 2 minutes.
That's wild.
Yeah. So he thought it was shorter, but is it longer?
Huh.
Yeah. Which
He's
is
like,
kind of.
I just counted 2 minutes and 5 minutes. That
Yeah, so he must have been
was like
like,
hard for me to wrap my head around when I read that sentence. I was like, how the
one,
hell? Yeah, I was like, how the hell? As like
two.
the bystander, you know, that's like taking down this information, like, information timing him.
But
I'm like,
that's.
my face would have said it all. Like I would have just like, you know, I've been like, what? And then he would have been like, oh, is something wrong? I'm like, no, keep going. We need you to keep counting, you know,
Well,
like
that's why they couldn't communicate with him, or he couldn't see them, because he'd be like, oh my God, when is this guy gonna finish? But that's like how crazy, like how much not having a clock affects you, like having awareness of time. That's crazy to me. So, and then on top of that, like temperatures in the cave were below freezing, because it's next to a glacier, and humidity was 98%. Because it's next to a glacier and it's a cave. And he stated that during this experiment, he had bad equipment, a small camp with lots of things cramped inside. His feet were always wet. His body temperature would sometimes get as low as 34 degrees Celsius,
Oh,
which is
wow.
93 degrees Fahrenheit, which I did not realize you could fucking survive that.
Me neither.
So, pastimes included reading, writing, and doing research on the cave itself. Which was, I guess, the original goal. So hopefully they got some good research out of that. So when he emerged from the cave, his day estimation calculated that it was the 20th of August. That was his own personal calculation.
And
When in
like
reality,
his
it was the
timing is
fourth.
obviously,
Sorry.
I would say his timing is obviously off too, because
Yeah.
like, you know,
Yeah.
he's counting 2 minutes within 5 minutes, so.
So he thinks it's the 20th of August, and in reality, it's the 14th of September.
God.
So his circadian rhythm, though he could not measure it, had changed drastically with no sun or clock to guide his rhythms. And he basically, quote unquote, lost tw essentially 25 days.
I was gonna say his clock went off by almost a full month. That's insane.
Yeah, so his psychological time had compressed by a factor of two, basically. So he believes that since the cave was completely dark with just a light bulb as light, his memory would often forget what he had done a day or two before. And he said, besides that, it's entirely black, like one long night. He did state that he got the most amazing sleep. Because his body chose by itself when to sleep and when to eat. So his sleep-wake cycle ended up being slightly longer than what ours is on Earth, about 24 hours and 30 minutes. However, his understanding of time was extremely warped while alone and without any way to tell time. So there's also a chance that he might have just forgotten about days too, because
Yeah.
everything was so monotonous.
So his day was only really 30 minutes longer than what we have here.
But we'll
But
get into the big changes that happened in between
yeah.
that time.
I just think it's interesting that like his own internal clock put him 30 minutes past what like our normal clock is, but then he's also counting, he's taking 5 minutes to count for 2 minutes, and then he's also off by almost a full month in terms of time frame. So yeah, that's weird.
Pretty wild stuff. So we'll get into what exactly may have been going on.
Did they like take more data from him after he readjusted in normal life too? Or did they just take data from like the cave experiment? Like, how long did it take for him? And you probably already have this down here somewhere, but how, like, I just want to know how long it took him to get back to normal,
So
essentially.
supposedly only a couple of days for most people following these experiences.
What? That's
So
crazy.
humans have a regular sleep-wake pattern, as we all know, on a 24-hour day schedule based on internal biological clocks in our body that govern different bodily functions and cycles. Our circadian rhythm lasts 24 hours. However, everyone's sleep-wake cycle is different. Different things can impact that cycle, such as external cues. These external cues are called exogenous zeitgebers. The most notable one affecting our sleep-wake cycle is daylight.
Okay.
The central clock that is synchronized by daylight is located in the suprachiasmic nuclei of the brain.
Oh,
And
wow.
I just had a thought right now, thinking about this, because different levels of daylight, like we typically, like our bodies are like, go to bed when it's dark and wake up when it's sunny. That's not
Yeah.
everybody, but like most humans are that way. So like when you're in an environment where it's completely dark or completely light all the time, it fucks you up. So like doing the whole midnight summer or midnight sun thing in Finland, like you just are awake all the
Oh, I bet.
time.
Yeah.
We did not get great sleep because of it.
Well, it made me think about like Alaska too. Like, don't they have like, what is it? Like in the winter, the sun never fully sets? Or no, it never
No.
fully rises. What
Yes,
is it?
so.
I forget what it is.
So above a certain line, you either in the summertime, like the sun doesn't set, and that's where you get like midsummer and all that. And then at night, the sun never comes up. Or
Okay.
sorry, well, in winter, the sun never comes up.
Yeah, okay.
There's a really good talking about TikTok accounts. There's this girl, Cecilia Blomgard, I think is her name. She lives on Svalbard, which, as she states, is a an island close to the North Pole. But it's like a Norwegian island chain that's basically very close to the North Pole. And so she goes through polar night and polar day, which is that
Okay.
like you are have sun for months or you have
Yeah.
no sun for months. And it's so fascinating to watch how she lives. And they just obviously go about their daily lives, but she talks a lot about how much it affects her mood and her energy and
Oh,
her
I'm
psychology.
sure.
It's very
Yeah.
interesting. So we are very, very much driven by daylight, which is an interesting thing. So this whole study launched his aims to study the psychology of human circadian rhythms. So over the next decade, he'd run experiments with volunteers to study this strange phenomenon, while other isolation studies were run in laboratory bunkers by other people. It was really hard to find volunteers for this kind of work, and experiments would only run about a month, whereas CIFRA used speleologists who were interested in caves and then would purposely choose to stay in the caves longer due to their high motivation to like study the environment. So he could run longer experiments, basically. So in 1962, CIFRA ran two more experiments with a man in a cave for 4 months and a woman for three. And in 1966, a man did 6 months. So these studies would indicate that circadian rhythms persist despite isolation, proving that all human beings have an endogenous clock inside of our brains, but the clock is not perfectly accurate. So the clock loses a few minutes every day without external sources, which results in what I'm calling a time shift. This is not an official term. It's just, there was no like a way for me to fully explain it without having this term. So I came up with the idea of time shift. So
Gotcha.
your time is shifting a little bit every single night.
Yeah.
So over the course of a few weeks, this results in that person and is doing everything that person's doing in the day ends up switching to at night because
Okay.
you're losing a few minutes every single time.
Yeah.
And then some experiments, basically, it's like you start off normal and then you start having this time shift happen. And then you start getting some weird cycles. So some of the experiments indicated that it would be more common for subjects to achieve 48-hour cycle periods for a period of time. And then, like with 36 hours of continuous activity, followed by 12 to 14 hours of sleep. So these would occur sporadically throughout that, which is
Okay.
why potentially Michael was losing some days,
Yeah.
basically, even though overall he had a fairly normal cycle.
Yeah.
So, which I think is really interesting. Like, can you imagine being awake for fucking 36 hours straight?
No, I
But
can't.
like, you're just like, okay, this is fine. Like, your body's fine with it.
Yeah.
Like, I have to force my body to be awake 24 hours, and it's
I know.
awful.
I know, me too. Like when you think back to like your all-nighters in college and stuff,
Yeah.
and you're like, yeah, you're just like, I'm so dead.
Crazy.
Like,
So
I guess that
that's.
was kind of like a 36 hour. Like you'd wake up at 8 and then like you'd pull an all-nighter and then you take your test at 8 or 9 and then you're done by 10 again or 10 a.m. whatever. Like, I guess that would be, what is
Yeah.
that?
I mean, it's
30.
doable.
Yeah. But it
It's
sucks, is what I'm saying. Like, I have to force
right.
myself to be like that, you know?
But this just happened naturally because, like, during these whole experiments, it's like they call it when they wake up and they call when they're like, okay, I think I'm ready to go to bed.
Yeah.
You know? So it's so odd. So they're choosing to do it. It's not like they're forcing themselves to do it. That's, I
Right.
guess, the interesting thing. So these studies coincided with the peak of the space race and the Cold War. So astronauts may not had necessarily have any exogenous indicators of time, such as daylight, to inform on time, because in space the sun's always fucking out, you know?
Yeah, that's fair.
So also various governments were interested in finding out how to increase productivity of their soldiers during like the Cold War, which is why the Russian sleep experiments might have actually happened, but just yeah, we don't really know what happened because the Cold, Russia was so closed off at that time. And so they're basically trying to figure out how to increase productivity of their soldiers. So Seyfra received a decent amount of funding for his work, which is nice for him. So after the finding of the whole 48-hour sleep cycle, the French army gave him funding to analyze how it would be possible for a soldier to double their waking activity, basically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, which is problematic to say the least, but France had also begun its nuclear submarines program and wanted to know how best to organize the sleep cycles of submariners because they would also be in that same situation where light would be artificial, basically.
Yeah.
And then NASA also showed an interest in his work and analyzed the data from the first 1962 experiment. So they're the ones who did the data analysis for that project. So a
Speaking
lot
of,
of interesting funding. So I have a figure from a scientific article here that kind of shows that time shift that I was talking about. And this is somebody who maintains a relatively normal cycle. This person did not have any of those crazy, like 36-hour cycles or whatever.
So, okay, help me understand this. So 0, 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 45. So that's like all the days. The days are on the y-axis.
Yeah.
And then like midnight,
Time.
noon, midnight is axis.
And I believe
So.
maybe the dashed lines are the waking hours, and then the solid lines are like when they're sleeping.
But what's the triangle within the solid line
I
mean?
think that's when their peak temperature is the low, or their temperature, body temperature is the lowest, I believe,
Oh,
which
that's
should
a.
be right before you wake up. But we're going to talk about it does shift a little bit
Yeah.
when you do this kind of experiment.
It does.
Yeah. So
Yeah.
that's kind of how that slippage occurs, and then eventually you'll get back on a normal schedule.
Yeah, I was gonna say if that triangle does really mean like that's when your body temperature is at its lowest, like the first 10 days it is at the tail end of the sleeping cycle.
Like it should be,
But
right?
yeah, like you said, it should be. And then
Yeah.
like the 10 to 35 days, it's like it's the first 5 days, it's like in the middle of your sleep cycle. And then like the next 5, 10, 15, 20 days, it's at the very beginning
Right,
of
which is
your.
bizarre
Yeah.
because it's true. I always feel colder when I wake up, and it's because my body temperature has gotten lower over the
Yeah.
course of the night, and that's normal, right?
Interesting. I always just
So,
up to us putting the AC down to 68 degrees. Waking up in the middle of the night, like, oh, I'm cold.
No, it's because your body is like because of my chronic illness, I actually drop a full degree every single night.
Oh.
Like I'll wake up with a 97 typically.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Because we did this one time because we were curious.
I was gonna say, I remember you saying like something about how you used to just like mess with medicine in your system for like an experiment too. You're like, oh, let's see how this does for me.
Well, yeah, because like nobody knows exactly. I mean, we're just managing symptoms with mine. There's no solve. There's no real
Yeah.
solve, so which is annoying. So yeah, back to the whole like temperature thing. So in addition, they analyzed three sleep stages, REM stage, when dreaming occurs, and then slow wave sleep. And they found a correlation between how long a person stays awake and how much they dream the next night. So, for every extra 10 minutes of activity a day, a person gets more one more extra minute of REM sleep. And then, so the more you dream, also the shorter reaction time you have during your next phase of wakefulness. So, dreaming is actually really good for you, I guess, if you want to be productive.
I dream a lot. And like I guess I didn't really realize that dreaming's kind of unusual. Do you dream a lot?
I do dream a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I asked Alex one time, like I probably remember, I don't know, 10 dreams per month kind of thing. Like, and then every now and then I'll have like a super real dream where I'm like I'm thinking in my dream.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember you talking about like you can kind of lucid dream a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, which like I guess I never really realized that that's what that was. But like
Yeah.
if I'm dreaming and like it tends to be more of like a horror dream or like just like a anxiety kind of dream, like stress dream,
Yeah.
I'm like I there comes a point in the dream where I'm like this is not real because like that lamp is different than what it is in my room or like it's not real because like there's
Yeah.
a door right there. You know what I
Yeah.
mean? Like, just there I can be it sounds weird, but I can be present in the dream for like a hot minute and be like, that's not real. I'm dreaming right now. Okay, I need to wake up. And like, then I wake up. And
Yeah.
then, but there was one time when I was trying to wake up and I couldn't fucking wake up. And I knew I was dreaming. And I was like screaming because I was like trying to make a noise in real life that would like snap me out of it. And what it came across in real life, because it woke Alex up, I went, ah. But in my dream, I'm like screaming at the top of
Yeah.
my lungs. But in real life, I was like, ah.
Yeah. We've
But.
talked about, I feel like, this stuff a lot because we've talked about your lucid dreaming. I very, very occasionally can lucid dream, but it's not super common for me. My big issue is sleep paralysis.
Yes.
So,
Oh my God, I've
which
had that
is
before too. That's scary.
super fun. So this is something that's really interesting to me, just like sleeping in general. It's just like a fascinating state to be, because you just shut off for
I
like freaking a
know.
couple hours. Crazy.
Well, my final finishing that thought with the dreaming part, I asked Alex if he ever like can like remembers his
Oh
dreams or
yeah.
has dreams, and he was like, no, not really. And I was like, what? Like, how do you
So
just, I was like, do people not normally like see in their dreams? Is that like an abnormal thing? And in terms of lucid dreaming, I never try to lucid dream. It just kind of like
It just
happens.
happens. Yeah.
Yeah. But I feel like I've read somewhere that there's people that can actually make themselves lucid dream too.
Yes. I guess it's something
Yeah.
you can practice, which I'm like, when I'm asleep, I ain't practicing shit,
No.
baby.
And like I like to say that I'm gonna like turn my brain off. Like I just need to like unplug and set aside. And like that's what sleeping is for me. Like I literally just flip the switch off and I'm like, I'm done. I'm
Yeah.
not
I'm not gonna be
not doing
present
it.
in this society for a couple of hours. Thank you. Goodbye.
Yes, exactly. It's like I need to go be away from this.
Yeah. So it's so interesting. So here's the other two, another interesting aspect of the phenomenon is that the time of the lowest daily body temperature would shift from the end of the sleep period to the start of it, showing that both behavioral and physiological cycles were changed because of this. So super interesting stuff. So while he used other volunteers to carry on his work, he would go into the caves to do an experiment like this himself two more times with the goal of understanding how age is impacted, like your psychological time or physiological time.
Like if you were in a cave for X amount of time, you would be like this many years old instead of that many years old.
No. Like, because age impacts a lot. So, like, 23-year-old versus 33-year-old versus, his last one was when he was 60.
Okay.
Just like how your physical age impacts all of this, because age is a significant factor in a lot of
Yeah.
experiments, right? Because your body changes so much between 23 and 60, right?
Oh, yeah.
So while he used other, oh no, I said that already. Okay, so this was in 1972. He was 33 years old, and he decided to live in a cave, alone in a cave again for 6 months this time. So, besides studying the effects of aging on psychological time, he had another goal. All of the other people he had put underground had done that 48-hour sleep-wake cycle except for him, and he wanted to see if he could catch it as well. So, on the 14th of February, 1972, he went into Midnight Cave. Near Del Rio, Texas, staying in a tent this time with a bed, a table, and a chair. He took a supply of frozen food and 780 gallons of water into the cave with him, as well as entertainment such as a record player, and books. Again, like in the previous study, there was also a phone line in which he could correspond with a research time that monitored him. Our research team, sorry, that monitored him 24/7 above ground. This would allow Seafray to call the team, letting them know when he woke up and thought it was day, and then also when he went to bed. So the team above ground would switch the lights on in the cave for him when he thought it was day. And then when he felt tired, he would inform the research team again, telling them he thought it was night, and then they would turn the lights off.
If I was
So
on the other side of this, I'd be like, this guy's fucking losing it, guys. Like,
like as the months wear on, you're like, this is getting really weird.
yeah, like things are going downhill quick.
Yeah. So this time he had a lot more light, which was good, than the previous time.
Yeah, that's good. It looks
And
like it literally is like a camp set up down
yeah.
there.
So he would also conduct daily experiments, taking blood pressure, memory, and physical tests, similar to his previous experiments. So after some time in the cave, he became depressed and despondent due to his lack of freedom, and he was extremely lonely.
Aw.
Which makes sense if you're doing this alone, eventually. I mean, 2 months, maybe fine, but like more than 2 months without human interaction, shit gets weird.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, we're social animals. We just are. I don't
Yeah.
care how much of an introvert you are, like you're still socializing in some way.
Yeah.
So he attempted to trap a mouse in order to have companionship, but in the process, he accidentally killed the mouse,
Oh
and that about
no.
killed him. So,
Oh man. He's like my only friend and I killed him.
yeah. Because that's the thing.
Oh
It's like if he had a dog down there, he probably wouldn't have had that much of that intense of a like depression. Because it
did
doesn't
he
even have to be
start?
a human. We just want something else living and breathing, you know?
Did he start hallucinating and like having an imaginary friend?
No.
Oh, okay.
But I'm sure some people would,
Yeah.
you know? So in addition, his record player broke and his books were destroyed due to the
Oh
dampness
no.
of the cave. So now he has no entertainment.
Oh no.
Oh
Oh
yeah.
yeah.
Siffre often thought of suicide as his condition became more dire and
Oh
his short-term memory, mental health, and eyesight all grew worse. He
no.
stated,
Okay, question, pause real quick.
yeah.
You said that he communicates with the research team, though.
Yes.
So, like, why can't he just be like, hey guys, I'm bored. Does anyone want to talk to me?
He was
Like,
committed to the bit.
oh, okay.
He was
Because,
committed to the study.
did he tell them that he, oh, I just like twitched my neck. Did he tell them that he was thinking about suicide?
I don't know. I don't
I feel
know.
like that's like an important part of information that like when you do a research project, you should like, hey, if it gets really bad down there and you start having these thoughts, like radio
Yeah.
us, we'll call it quits, you know, like we're not gonna continue
Well,
on.
I'm wondering if like this was during a time when mental health was not as
Oh, like
prioritized.
what time of year was
We're
this?
in the
The
60s
60s?
and 70s. This
Oh
is in the
yeah, I
70s.
never mind. I keep forgetting that we're, you know, back
Yeah.
in that the time frame.
So I almost wonder if like if that had occurred in other test subjects, they may not have brought it up because they didn't want to. Yeah. So
I
yeah.
hear
Yep. So that's maybe what I think was going on, which is so sad. But he didn't commit suicide, so
Yeah.
you know, but he was feeling it, for sure. So he stated of this experiment, like him being down there, he would be overcome with lethargy and bitterness. I sit on a rock and stare at my campsite in the bowels of Midnight Cave near Del Rio, Texas. Behind me lie 100 days of solitude, ahead loom 2.5 more lonely months. But I, a wildly displaced Frenchman, know none of this, for I am living beyond time, divorced from calendars and clocks and from sun and moon to help determine, among other things, the natural rhythms of life. And so that's him like reflecting on how he felt at that time. So let's talk about what was going on with the sleep cycle, though.
Yeah, I have a
So,
quick question. I may have missed you saying this earlier, and I was trying to look back and read, but why did he pick Texas? Because he's a Frenchman that started in the Alps with his foot
yeah,
research,
I'm not
right?
sure, but I'm wondering if it's because the cave conditions were probably more comfortable,
Oh, okay.
than they're probably not as cold. Like when you go in a Texas cave, it's still gonna be like 60s, like he
Yeah.
said, 60s, but you're not gonna be like freezing your ass off, basically.
Right. Gotcha.
So I wonder if that had something to do with it. I'm not sure why they picked Midnight Cave.
I just think it's interesting he came all the way from France to go
Right.
be
And it
isolated.
kind of bit him in the ass later, but
Yeah.
we'll talk about that too.
Okay.
So for the first 35 days, Sifra had a sleep-wake cycle of 26 hours, but things changed as time wore on. On day 37, he stayed up a few more hours than usual and then slept very long. The pattern of being awake and then asleep for a long time occurred periodically throughout the next month, sometimes resulting in a sleep-wake cycle as long as 48 hours. So he did occasionally catch that 48-hour cycle. On day 63, he returned to a cycle of 26 hours. 9 weeks later, his sleep-wake cycle became more varied and random for 20 days. It would vary in time from 18 to 52 hours.
Oh my God.
So there was a lot of variation going on that during that time.
Yeah.
So, and then on day 150, he returned to a 26-hour cycle that lasted until the experiment's end. So it's almost like the body's trying to figure it out. And then they're like, okay, let's just stick with this 26-hour thing. Like,
Yeah.
so
That's wild, though.
interesting. Yeah. So he
So it's like,
spent, sorry, go
literally,
ahead.
I have to say it's wild that like sometimes it resulted in a cycle as long as 48 hours. And then like it would vary from 18 to 52 hours. Jesus, it's
Yeah.
crazy.
So on day 150, he returned to, oh no, I said that already. So he spent a total of 205 days underground by the end of the experiment.
That's great.
And when he emerged from the cave, his estimate of what the date was again 2 months off now from the original date or the actual date. At the experiment's end, Seyfra thought that although the when he analyzed the data, that although the biological rhythm was inconsistent without any external cues, it was still like manageable. However, without companionship or entertainment, it would be extremely difficult to do this again.
Yeah, because he's like, I'm gonna unalive myself if.
Yeah. So he did then conducted his last and third isolation experiment at 60, age 60, on November 30th, 1999, for a length of just 2 months this time, again to study how circadian rhythms alter with age. So he had not conducted any experiments since that 1972 experiment.
Yeah.
One, because I think it like shook him as a human.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And two, he was in $100,000 in debt, basically because he underestimated the cost of bringing his experiments from Europe to the United States, which I'm like, welcome to the land of debt, baby.
Yeah. My God.
Which I kind of, it's not hilarious, but it is hilarious. You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's crazy, though.
Yeah.
What a wild study.
Yeah. So this time he entered the Clamuse Cave in southern France, and this time he was 2,970 feet below the surface.
So, how much farther below the surface is that than he was before?
He was only like 100 and something.
Oh my God.
So I'm like, he is 60 and he is going 2,700 feet below the surface.
I feel like he kind of did that in reverse. I feel like when you're
Yeah.
like 30 something, you go that deep, not that
Like I said, he's committed to the bit.
deep.
So, and he emerged
Wow.
from this on February 14th, 2000. He brought champagne and foie gras to ring in the new millennium, but
Aww.
was 3.5 days late due to the time slippage he
Oh no, that's
experienced.
oh.
I think that's funny though.
He's like celebrating 3 days later. Happy New Year! And everyone's
Yeah.
like, oh, it's done and over with, but
Yeah.
okay.
No one's dead. I mean, we didn't hit
Yeah.
Y2K. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
So when asked why he wanted to go back into the cave and do this again, obviously he talked about his goal of studying the phenomenon with age, but also stated that he wanted to follow the lead of the famous astronaut John Glenn, who went back to space at age 77. Which we're going to actually talk about John Glenn a little bit later this year. Very
Okay.
famous early American astronaut before we ended up going to the moon. What he I think he was the first American to orbit the Earth.
Oh,
I think that was
okay.
his
I don't know
official
enough about
deal. Yeah. That was
enough
back
about
when we were like, let's just put a guy on a capsule and let's rocket him up there and see what happens, kind of thing.
yeah.
That was his state of space exploration.
Another astronaut space aside, real quick. I learned today that there was an astronaut who was on Apollo 13, and a day after Apollo 13 lifted off, the astronaut, whose name was Jack Swigert, realizes that he forgot to file his taxes. And so then he later gets an extension for being out of the country. That was on one of my like games that I play in the
Little
morning.
fun facts. That's good.
Yeah, it was like a history game that I play every week, and that was it today.
Yeah.
I was
Yeah,
like, that's hilarious.
of course you'd be distracted and not doing your taxes if you're about to go to this fucking space.
Yeah. He's like, oh, he was out of the country. He gets an extension. I was like, he was
Yeah.
out of the world. Like,
He was off of the planet,
yeah,
like
like out of the country, my ass. Like, yeah, I guess that works, but
technically you're correct.
yeah. I just thought that was
So
funny.
yeah, that is, and then we have covered the story of Apollo 13. It's one
Yeah.
of our earlier episodes. That one's so interesting. But anyway, so in time isolation experience, there's experiments are still occurring in caves today, as we are still trying to understand this aspect of the human brain. So just back in 2021, a study called the Deep Time Study put 15 French volunteers in Lombrie's caves for 40 days without any way to tell time. So this time is like there's a bunch of people, so it's also kind of a social experiment.
Yeah.
The group included 8 men and 7 women aged 27 to 50. At the end of 40 days, most volunteers had only completed 30 sleep-wake cycles, ending up with days that were more like 30 hours long, although one woman only slept 23 times in 40 days.
Oh,
So
wow.
she hit that 48-hour
Yeah.
cycle. It was forbidden to wake people up, as they wanted every person to be detached from time completely. So there weren't like schedules in that way. It's just like when you were awake and other people were awake, you worked with them, you talked to them, you slept or you ate with them. I
Yeah.
don't know, maybe you slept with them too. Who knows? Who knows what
Who
got up down there?
knows?
I don't know. Actually, I don't actually know. Ignore me. So one volunteer stated that it was like pressing pause on life. Project director of the study and French-Swiss explorer Christian Klotz stated, during the first week in the cave, it was really hard to accept the idea that when I wake up, I didn't have to check my smartphone or my watch and see if I slept enough. I just have to listen to my body. Which,
Yeah.
that's a really interesting, like, modern take on that. However, things were not all perfect. They had very little water to wash with, and the cave was very humid. So hygiene did become somewhat of an issue. Like Sifra, when they were told the experiment was over, they were shocked, all of them agreeing that time t seemed to pass more slowly in the cave. While Sifra was not a part of this project, as he is now 85 years old, his influence is shown everywhere in the Deep Time study. Claude explained that the Deep Time experiment is important, as our future as humans on this planet will evolve. We must learn to better understand how our brains are capable of finding new solutions, whatever the solution. And that is the work and life of Michael Seyfra and the time isolation experiments.
That is
I
wild.
know. So it's definitely a little different from what we do, but I do occasionally like to do these ones. You weren't on the one we did, but we did the, I think you were out with COVID or something. We did the high seas Mars, where they basically enter a Mars simulation where they like
Oh,
pretend to
yes.
live on Mars for like a year.
I was out for that.
Yeah, that one's so fascinating to me too. And nobody dies, which is nice. Sometimes we need a break, I think, from the death.
Yeah, like a nice little scientific study every now
Yeah,
and then is
every now and
good.
then, just throw one in. I do have another one for this year that I'm pretty excited about.
Which
That's
one is
kind of like
that?
this as well. Because I mean, I think part of this is trying to understand, are you fostering or watching somebody's dog?
I'm watching someone's dog. Yeah, sorry.
Okay. It's
And
like, that's not whaling.
yeah, and he's right there, somewhere back there.
Yeah.
But they cannot be outside together because they lose their minds out there, which is why I had to get up and open the door a few times because I'm like,
Oh my
one in, one
goodness.
out, one in, one out. Yeah. But
Silly
anyway.
puppies.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is it's I mean, part of the podcast is not only to talk about the stories, but also to talk about like the science and the psychology and
Yeah.
behind all of this too. So
No, that's
anyway.
interesting. I'm glad he didn't die. It's interesting that he did it multiple times to try to figure out exactly what was going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah,
Committed.
he
If
was
anything.
committed to the
I
bit.
wonder if one part of the reasons they went to Midnight Cave maybe was just to research it, because I feel like a lot of what they were doing while they were awake was
Yeah.
like researching the cave to keep themselves busy. But I don't know.
Did they say if he lost or gained any weight? Because one of these pictures, he's weighing himself.
Yeah, I think he lost weight. Because I think when you become apathetic like that, you just don't care about eating, or
Oh
it's
yeah, I
more of
also
like
wonder. Yeah, I wonder too. Like if the wake and sleep cycles too. You're like, oh, like I'm awake for X amount of hours, and like. Now, as humans, I feel like it's like every 4 hours you're like eating, you know, like breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Yeah, that's true.
But like if you're awake for like 48 hours, like
Are
I'm
you
fucking
eating every
yeah.
4 hours, or are you still eating your 3 square meals?
Yeah, and like the time in between is just longer. So that was
I don't
yeah.
know. I'd be fucking snacking constantly because I'd be bored.
Like I'm already kind of a grazer how it is. Like Alex is very much like a 3 meal person. And then like when we started dating, I was like always just kind of snacking. And like I remember telling him how like I actually like I don't really sit down and eat meals. He's like, well then how do you eat? I was like, I just kind of like I just graze during
Yeah.
the day, you know, and like I'm just that's how I eat, you know. I was like,
Yeah.
it's weird for me to like cook a full dinner and like sit down and that full dinner, like I don't know,
Yeah,
so
you do. You're a grazer. I'm a 3 square meal person.
yeah,
But I would also graze if I would just honestly, I hate my body for this, but I'm always hungry. I'm hungry all the time.
yeah.
Like I could literally eat most. It's getting to the point though where I have to start eating smaller, so maybe I will turn into a grazer just because of like the nausea factor.
Oh, true,
So
yeah.
like eating a lot now is like it makes me nauseous.
Yeah.
Which on the one hand doesn't feel great, but on the other hand, then I'm not hungry for once in my fucking life. So I'm like not promoting like bad eating habits, but it is like hell in some ways it's helping me, like forcing me to like eat smaller meals, I guess,
Yeah.
basically. So finally my body's like, okay, enough, you dumb bitch, enough. Like
Yeah, I've been there. Alex and I call that hurting ourselves. We're like, oh, I hurt myself. I
yeah
ate too much.
it does. I did that kind of yesterday. I didn't get nauseous, but we didn't really have anything to eat because we're in the middle of the move, and we ordered pizza, and then I was sleepy, so then I had to go take a nap.
Yeah. Yeah. The other day we went out to this restaurant a couple keys away, and it's such a good restaurant. Like it was one of those things, like I hurt myself. And I also wore a dress that was kind of like cinched up around like
Oh.
and those don't the historically those types of dresses have never done well for me because like I'm a sensitive tummy girly. And so like if I have any type of pressure like on that part of my abdomen, like even when I'm not eating, like it makes me nauseous. And so then like I put on a dress that has that kind of cinched band there, and then I go and like stuff myself, and we're like walking out. I'm like, I
Yeah.
gotta go take this dress off because I think I might throw up if I have to keep it on me like any longer. Like,
Yeah.
but Alex is like, you ordered spicy margaritas, fucking gumbo. Like, of course you're gonna like,
Course you feel like you're gonna explode.
yeah, he's like,
Because
you're
not only did you consume a lot of food and spices, the liquid level is like
yeah.
also.
Yeah, but it was good. Like I'm satisfied with what I ate. I'm just stuffed. Like
Yeah. No, sometimes you just gotta do it. Do we have Conservation Corner? I'm really
yeah,
curious
give
to
it.
see what you're gonna do for this one because it's such a weird one. Yeah.
It is. Do you want to do, did you do your sources already? Do you
Oh,
want to?
thank you. Fuck.
Yeah.
Okay, so my sources for this was Caveman, an interview with Michelle Cifra by Joshua Foer and Michelle Cifra from Cabinet Magazine. We have the Cifra Cave Study Psychology from Study Smarter. We have 6 months alone in Midnight Cave, and that is by James M. Deem. And then we have Chronobiology, which is from McGill. And then we have Deep Time Study, French volunteers leave cave after 40 days in isolation from the BBC, and then a test subject who spent 40 days in a cave for science breaks down what it was like from weird sleep patterns to generating power with a bike, by Marianne Gounod from Business Insider. And then I also used the Wikipedia for Michael Cifra to get, early life kind of information. So those were my sources.
Noise, noise. So, I think you're gonna think this is funny for our conservation corner.
Okay.
I saw your note about like Alps or Del Rio, Texas.
Yeah, very
Like,
different vibes.
yeah. And I was like, I feel like we've done some sort of Alp conservation corner before already. So I was like, let me just look and see what where Del Rio, Texas is, and like what it's all about, you know. And so I picked Del Rio, Texas, because I thought it was a little bit different than what we've done in the past. And there is a national recreation area near Del Rio that is called Amistad
I think it's
National
Amistad, yeah.
National Recreation Area. So that's where we are today.
Oh, and by the way, this is right on the border, Del
Yeah.
Rio.
That's what I was, yeah. So it's right in the, yeah, in the vicinity of Del Rio, Texas. Amistad National Recreation Area is a 57,292 acre park that is located along the US and Mexico border. So we're like sitting right on that side of Texas where I don't know what that like bottom part of Texas is called,
The
but it,
bottom part.
well, you know how
I would
it's got like a leg. It's like a, it's not a peninsula because it's not surrounded by
it's
water, but it's
just we
got like
just call
that.
it South Texas or
Okay.
like the Rio Grande Valley, probably.
Gotcha. But we're in South Texas along the US-Mexico border. Although technically considered a national recreation area rather than a national park, it's still included among the list of national parks as it's managed by the US National Park Service. The park essentially contains the American side of the land surrounding Amistad Reservoir. The park is likely most celebrated for boating, fishing, and other types of aquatic recreation, but it's also home to an array of fantastic wildlife species. Here, you'll find monarch butterflies, various bird species, mammals, and reptiles. So, for today's conservation corner, we're going to be talking about the monarch butterfly. Why? Well, because you can actually take a trip to Amistad National Recreation Area to view the monarch migration mania, which I think is super cool. I've always just had a fascination with the monarch migration. Like it's, you hear about like marine animals migrating and terrestrial animals migrating, birds migrating, but like when you think about butterflies migrating and how far they travel and how small their little body is, I'm like, my mind gets blown.
And you know what? We haven't done a lot of inverts, I don't think, for
Yeah.
Conservation Corner. So,
Yeah.
good one.
So, yeah. So you can plan your trip in October. The timing of the event varies slightly, but if you plan your trip around mid to late October, you're usually going to have ample opportunities to enjoy the monarch migration. On December 30th, 2021, the International Union for the Conservation of Nature, which is what we know as the IUCN Red List, added the migratory monarch butterfly to the Red List of Threatened Species as endangered. The endangered meaning is a toxin or toxin, a taxon that is endangered when the best available evidence indicates that it meets any of the criteria A to E for endangered, and it is therefore considered to be facing a very high risk of extinction in the wild. And so the criteria A to E I have it kind of pulled up here. So A means population size reduction. B means geographic range in the form of either extent of occurrence or area of occupancy. C means small population size and decline. D, it means very small or restricted population. And then E is quantitative analysis. So they have all of these different criteria that they take into account for naming a species as threatened or endangered or critically endangered, what have you. So.
I used to have a professor, or she was on my graduate advisory board. She did IUCN red listed like fish, basically. She did the
Oh,
research that like determined whether they'd be on the red list or not.
cool.
So,
Nice.
yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, so 2021 monarch butterfly is considered endangered. And then in June of 2023, the IUCN Standards and Petitions Committee received a petition regarding their listing of the migratory monarch butterfly. The petition challenged the appropriateness of population models used in its assessment over the past 10 years. And after much deliberation, the Standards and Petitions Committee announced on September 27th of 2023 that the IUCN would change their listing of the migratory monarch butterfly from endangered to vulnerable on December 11th, 2023. So, vulnerable is another level on this red list. And so the scale from least concern to most concern goes like this. So it's least concern, and then you move up to near threatened, and then vulnerable, and then endangered, and then critically endangered, and then extinct in the wild, and then extinct as the final end of that scale. So the monarch butterfly went from being endangered to being vulnerable. So what that means is it actually took a step in the right direction in terms of its conservation status. So that's nice, you
We're
know.
having a very positive episode, so even just not like us.
Yeah. So I mean that was good news, right? Because like you hear all of this, you know, you hear all of these things about pollinators being on the decline, especially like the bees, you know. So it's nice to know that the butterfly, the monarch butterfly, took a step in the right direction. So the primary reason for this shift in status was not due to a change in the current status of migratory monarchs. Many methods exist for examining population trends over time, all of which are complex, especially for a migratory insect with a broad geographic range. IUCN specified criteria are based on the level of population reduction over the past 10 years or 3 generations, which is longer, or whichever is longer. In the original review, population data demonstrated that a long-term population decline in migratory monarchs over multiple decades, when reevaluated per IUCN criteria, the population decline within the last 10 years did not match the decline of the longer-term trend. Therefore, the review warranted a change in IUCN status to be congruent with its evaluation criteria. Both methods of population evaluation used were scientifically valid. The monarch's IUCN status change highlights science's dynamic nature and the imperative need for continuous data collection and evaluation. So I think that was interesting, where they like relooked at the data and they were like, oh, this actually could be you know, changed a bit.
And that happens more, I think, than people realize. Things get put on and off the IUCN list quite frequently.
Yeah. I think it's kind of a fun website to, you know,
What's the website so I can hit?
IUCN Red List website. So you just like click around and see like, you know, what animals are endangered and which ones are vulnerable. I don't know. It's, they have like literally every animal that they have surveyed. There's animals on there that like are data deficient, but you know.
Yes, that's another problem. I think for IUCN, especially for us, with a lot of our fishes, a lot of them are considered rare just because they are live on the bottom of the ocean and nobody catches them.
Yeah.
So it's like we just don't have a lot of data because we don't have methods to really effectively sample the bottom of the ocean. And I'm not talking about like continental shelf. I'm talking about like deep sea,
Yeah.
So that's an issue for us. And that's why a lot of species are data deficient.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
But anyway, the persistence of the monarch butterfly's spectacular and unique migratory phenomenon is dependent on the conservation of habitats in Canada, the United States, and Mexico. No species better symbolizes the ecological links among the three countries. Many government agencies, organizations, and individuals across North America are working on projects to conserve monarch habitats and the migration phenomenon. I kind of put this in a little bit of an odd order. Let me just.
all good.
So, with vibrant orange and black wings that streak across the sky, the monarch butterfly is one of North America's most iconic species. The impressive monarch makes a multi-generational 3,000-mile migration,
That's
traveling.
crazy.
I know, that's what I'm saying. Like, they're so itty-bitty and they travel 3,000 miles.
Like the hummingbirds do that too. It's like nuts, you know?
Yeah. So they travel south to Mexico each fall and back up to Canada in the spring. West of the Rockies, the western population migrates to central and southern California each fall. But threatened with widespread habitat loss, increased use of pesticides, and climate change impacts, monarchs have suffered a population decline upward of 90% in the recent decades. The monarch's decline is an indicator of the habitat decline and stress that all pollinators are facing. For monarchs, the decline is inextricably linked to a decline in milkweed, the invertebrate's only caterpillar host plant. Without milkweed, monarchs can't compete. I'm sorry, monarchs can't complete their life cycle and populations plummet. So without the milkweed plant, you can't have your caterpillars. And then without the caterpillars, you can't have your butterflies. So if you want to help the monarch, plant some milkweed.
Well, that's like one of those examples of an animal that kind of like panda bears, where they like only eat the one thing, and then when the
Yeah.
one thing isn't there, that's why I think eventually, I mean, we are going through a mass extinction event right now, but I think the animals that come out on the other side of that are going to be generalist animals that eat lots of different things. So,
Yeah.
but yeah, if you actually want to help the monarchs, planting milkweed in your backyard is, especially if you're on the migration path,
Yeah. So let's
is
talk
a
about the
great thing.
migration path,
Yeah.
because I thought that was pretty interesting. So, it's called the I-35 Habitat Corridor. So I-35 stretches, where's my map? I had it up. It stretches from northeast Minnesota down to south Texas to that
Yeah,
border.
we live off of 35.
And so
So
I read somewhere recently that like all numbers or all roads ending in an odd number are roads that stretch north and south. And then all roads that end in an even number are roads that stretch east and west. And so many monarch butterflies make their migratory journey along the Central Flyway, which is on the I-35 Habitat Corridor, a migration route that follows the path of the Great Plains from Texas and New Mexico up to Montana and North Dakota. The National Wildlife Federation has been working with the state departments of transportation from Texas to Minnesota along Interstate 35, which runs along the Central Flyway, to coordinate the Monarch Highway effort. Through this effort, state departments of transportation are promoting pollinator habitat and their rights of way by undertaking studies on the quality of habitat and presence of pollinators in their roadsides, updating signage, educating the public through the rest area demonstration gardens, planting milkweed and wildflowers, and participating in their respective state pollinator conservation plans. There are things that are or events called Monarch Summits. So, as a part of an agreement with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, the National Wildlife Federation helped support the facility or support and facilitate our state affiliates along the Central Migratory Flyway with the ability to host state monarch summits. Working in concert with state fish and wildlife agencies, these summits helped inform the Mid-America Monarch Conservation Strategy, which is a strategy that is critical to putting 1.3 billion milkweed stems in the ground and ultimately saving the monarch butterfly. Certain states have hosted monarch summits to create an action plan and share resources for monarch conservation. Among these are state agencies, nonprofits, businesses, and individuals. These states include Illinois, Indiana, Kansas, Oklahoma, Michigan, Arkansas, Missouri, Texas, Kentucky, Ohio, Nebraska, and South Dakota. Other state affiliates have been working on the ground on monarch habitat monitoring and citizen science for decades. So that's my little blurb on our conservation corner for the monarch butterfly.
Yeah, and I do remember living in Kansas. I think the monarch might actually be the state insect. I'm not sure, but I remember like the migration happening, and then like in the fall, you'd see monarchs everywhere because
Yeah.
they were like flying through. So I
Yeah,
thought I-35 corridor. So I lied. I don't live off of I-35. I live off of, I guess, US 35.
Oh,
I don't
okay.
know.
Like a
One of
route.
the 35s.
Actually,
It's confusing because I guess there's two of them and I did not realize
yeah.
that. I don't know what exactly you would call. Anyway.
And so I'm gonna have this map up here that I'm trying to zoom in on. So South Florida has a non-migratory population of monarch butterflies, and that's what I'm
Interesting.
seeing. Yeah, I've been seeing a few around the house. So that's probably what I'm seeing right now. And then Texas, the South Southern states like Virginia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, parts of most of Kentucky, Arkansas, Louisiana, Oklahoma, and Texas are spring breeding areas. And then a lot of the Northeast, Midwest, and Western states, those are summer breeding areas. And then you take West Texas, and then the southern route along, what is that? Nevada and Arizona. Oh, no. What, New Mexico and Arizona. And then go into Nevada and California, and then up into Oregon a bit. That's spring and summer breeding areas. And then essentially a little bit of the Northwest is no breeding area. So,
Well, and those like overwintering areas in Mexico that they go
yeah.
to
And there's
are
close to
like,
California is overwintering, it looks like too.
yeah. So those mountains, like the trees there in Mexico, literally just get covered in monarch butterflies,
It'd be so cool.
which is really interesting. I
Like
bet
all the
you.
photos that I've ever seen of the monarch migration, I'm like, that is insane. I think
Yeah.
it's so cool to see.
I bet y'all have the like a non-migratory group just because it's like warm enough in Florida that they can be there all year round, right?
Yeah. I mean it's pretty much South Florida. It goes North Okeechobee is a gray area. South of Okeechobee is like the non-migratory population. I just texted it to you.
Yeah, I'm looking at a map right now myself, but it's interesting.
Yeah.
It's very, very amazing that these small little guys can do this.
I know, right? Like, you guys are so cute, so teeny, and you travel 3,000 miles. You guys must be so tired.
Yeah. That's why they just like hang out on the trees, and I think they just sleep and kind of hibernate in Mexico,
Yeah.
and yeah. Cool
And so,
stuff. All
yeah.
right. That was a good one.
Yeah, my sources for that are kind of all over the place. It's animals.net, monarchjointventure.org, fs.usda.gov, and then nwf.org, so National Wildlife Federation.
Okay. Well, I mean, we had kind of a positive episode today, but I guess we both probably have happy things to talk about too.
Yeah, you want to go first or you want me to go first? Don't matter to me.
Yeah. So I'm finally not having panic attacks every day about the
You're
move, be
next.
and I think it's because it's like happening now.
Yeah.
And like we have the pot outside, we have most of our furniture in there now. Now it's just a matter of like finishing packing up the kitchen and taking care of like the odds and ends that are everywhere and selling
Yeah.
stuff, getting rid of the furniture that we're not bringing with us. And so I'm a little bit more relaxed now about it, and I'm starting to get excited about it again. So I think I was like excited about it, and then for like a couple of weeks I was like, oh God, oh God, oh God, how are we gonna do this? Fuck, 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 what did I do? Oh my God, I'm panicking.
It's
And
like that
now,
Michael Scott where he's like, oh my God, it's happening. It's happening. Everybody, it's
It's
happening.
because it's just like, oh, we have so much stuff. Why do we have so much stuff? What is, why? So, and so now we have a place to live. We have the pod, it's getting packed. We're probably going to be able to fit most of the things we wanted to take. So that's good. Now we just have to clean and paint the house. So,
Oh yeah, just like touch up since you're renting.
well, I decided, because it's me, I decided to paint a couple of walls. So we're gonna paint
Oh,
those white.
gotcha,
Yeah.
gotcha.
So I guess that's my happy thing, is I'm actually getting excited about going to that area and just being able to explore, because there's just gonna be so much more to do. And I'm
Yeah, and
excited
it's
about
like a
that.
nice time of year. Like you're getting in right after like their winter, so you're like you can prepare for the next winter. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I get
Like.
to experience like the beautiful Cape Cod summer and like the
Yeah.
beautiful fall. And then I have to deal with winter. So,
Yes.
but like in
Yeah.
December, it'll be beautiful and Christmassy. It's January, February, and March, I think, that are going to be the hard part. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So,
You guys will figure it out, though.
but I'd
It'll.
rather have 9 months out of the year where I'm happy than the fucking like 4 months I have here. You
Yeah,
know what
no,
I
I was gonna
mean?
say you're a cold weather person for sure.
Yeah.
So. Like, I
Yeah.
definitely hate how hot it gets down here, but at the same time, I don't think I would be able to like have 3 months of winter. You know what I mean? I definitely miss the four seasons. Like, I wish
Yeah.
fall kind of happened, but yeah, I like that we can go to Iowa and experience winter there
Yes.
and then come back here.
Yes.
But it does get freaking hot out. I'm like, this is too much. Like, I don't
Yeah.
know how to do this, but.
I and at least you have like ocean breezes and clear water. We have swamp,
Yeah.
but all right. Well, what's your happy thing?
My happy thing is, I don't know, like we went to Bahia Honda yesterday. That was like a nice
Ooh.
day. We had a nice
Yeah.
day yesterday, you know. Ironically, we had to cut it short because I forgot to turn the sprinkler off at our house. And so we had the sprinkler going for 2 hours instead of 20 minutes. So, and I was reading a book on the beach, just like in the sun. We're just like sharing a hydro flask of wine, you know, we're just
Yeah.
relaxing. And I'm like reading my book like this. And I'm like, oh. And he's like, what? And I was like, I forgot to turn the sprinkler off. And he was like, oh my God. I'm like, it was like a sudden realization. I was like, oh no. I was
That's hilarious. Oh my
like,
God.
man, like I was having such a good time. You know, like, I
Yeah.
want to leave. So we might go back this afternoon because it's kind of sunny and good weather out again. But we were supposed to go on the boat yesterday. It was really a little too windy to go out on the boat. So we just decided to go to Bahia Honda. But yeah, we had ourselves a nice little day yesterday. Yeah, that was that's my happy thing is just we have our parks pass and we were like we should really do this more often because it was free to get in. Obviously, like
Right.
Alex a fee to get the parks pass, but like I was it's only like 10 minutes away from our house and it's like one of the larger beaches around here. So I'm like, why don't we
Yeah.
go more often, you know, and like
Yeah.
we have the parks pass, we should just use it. And then also like we could just like go after work and watch the sunset, have like a little like charcuterie picnic basket sunset moment, you know? So I guess that's my happy thing is like we went and had a nice day yesterday. We might do that again today. But
Yeah.
you know, the option is just there for us,
Yeah.
which is nice.
Yeah, Corey used and I used to do like after work picnics on the Colonial Parkway all the time when we lived in Virginia.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. So, well, I might not be on the next episode.
Yeah, just keep me posted on what you need from me and I got
'Cause
you, girl.
this is kind of the last thing. This and editing it are kind of the last thing that I'm doing before we dismantle the PC and
Yeah.
the, 'cause I don't have a laptop anymore. So yeah, so it'll be weird.
Yeah.
But we'll definitely in May we'll get back together and keep chit-chatting about shit.
I'm excited.
But yeah, so yeah, I'm moving to Cape Cod basically.
Do you have a rental that you've already like signed? Okay.
Yeah, because that was why part of the reason why I was having panic attacks because I was like, where are we gonna live? I
Yeah.
basically told my supervisor, I was like, I don't know that I'm gonna have housing secured before that start date, so I'm gonna keep you updated, but we may have to
Yeah.
push it back, and I don't like, you know what I mean? So, but it's
Was
all
it
good,
hard?
it's happening. But yeah, so I'll see you guys in like 2 episodes basically.
Nice.
And by the time you're hearing this one, I will probably be on the road across
Yeah.
country.
Give it a listen if you're bored, you know?
Yeah, I'll probably give my own episode a listen. I
Yeah.
do it all the time.
Yeah, me too.
So, all right. With or
Cool.
no, not yet. Where can our listeners find us?
Yeah, they can find us on social media on Instagram, Facebook, and TikTok. Facebook is Mother Nature Will Kill You. Instagram is Mother Nature Will Kill You podcast. Instagram is MNWKY podcast. We're kind of all over the board there. And then they can listen to us on any streaming platform. So Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, our own website, which is Mother Nature Will Kill You podcast.com. I think that's it.
Okay. If you have a story about how one time you isolated yourself in a cave, although I don't know why you would have that story, we want to hear about it. But if you've just had an experience in nature, maybe you had an uncomfortable time in a cave, or maybe you saw a bear out on the trail. We want to hear about that too. You can submit any real life survival stories to either our website has a page where you can submit stories or our email. And then if you want to support podcast, but don't have any money because we live in a post-capitalist hellscape, you can submit a 5-star review to any of our listening platforms. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then yeah, that's it. Yeah.
Speaking of like living in a cave, if, you're like, I don't know why you would have to do that. It made me think about when we put up our hurricane shutters and our house is literally a cave. And I was like, I guess I could kind of relate to that
You can
because it's just
relate. Yeah.
no sunlight in the house. And then you open the front door and you're like, ah,
And
the fire.
blinded.
Yeah.
Because a hurricane only takes like a day to really go through, you know?
Yeah. We're just
Yeah.
too lazy to take them down afterwards.
Yeah. Well, all right. So with that,
Until next time, stay safe, but most of all,
stay curious, explorers.
bye.
Go get some sleep.